WCHL news director Blake Hodge was in the courtroom today when the plea was issued and the sentence got handed down. He joins us now on the phone. Blake, thanks for joining us. What went down in court today?
It was roughly a three-hour hearing. It opened very quickly with the guilty pleas coming through from Craig Stephen Hicks's. The case numbers were read off, and he very plainly said guilty to all four of those charges. As you said, Aaron, the three murder charges here and the discharging a weapon into an occupied dwelling charge that will be added on, and we can talk about the sentencing here in just a couple of minutes. We went through the factual basis, which is always presented by the prosecution, to say if this case would have gone to trial, here's what we would have presented. And it details a lot of what we have not been able to kind of not seen discussed in a lot of the public light, but some of the things that seem to be going on behind the scenes in terms of this not being a case of looking at innocence or guilt, but looking at some of the other circumstances around this and talking about the punishment that would come along with this case. So this factual basis today detailed Craig Hicks as a hateful person who had lived in this neighborhood in Chapel Hill at the Finley Ford condos and had taken it upon himself in some ways to, and in a lot of cases wrongly, reflect the parking regulations of the housing complex and enforce that kind of at his will, based or in opposition of what the actual regulations were in a lot of cases. And the reason I mention that is because that seemed to be what he relayed to police early on, and that ended up going out as the first statement from Chapel Hill police at the time, the night after, or the morning after the shooting that night, was it was possibly motivated by a parking dispute. And that has been at the crux of the argument in the 4 years since then, as the family and others have pushed for this to be a hate crime and classified in that fashion, rather than giving any credence to the parking dispute side of it. So we have the factual basis run through today. We also heard from family members, and we saw some new pieces of evidence today, Aaron, as well, that were quite disturbing in a lot of ways, but for the first time seeing some of these pieces of evidence put in front of the public to go into the sentencing phase today.
And one of the, I think the piece of evidence that has gotten the most attention was the cell phone video footage of the shooting taking place. And this was Dia Barakat's cell phone and correct me if I'm wrong, because you were in the courtroom and heard more discussion about this, but this was Dia Barakat seeing Craig Hicks coming to the door and having had several altercations with him in the past, pulling out his cell phone to take a video of whatever was about to happen, right?
Yeah, so what was happening there was Hicks had been known throughout the community to an extent that they were working to get a restraining order against Hicks. So in this case, Dia Barakat opened his phone, started a recording whenever he was there having dinner with his wife, Yusur, and her younger sister, Razan. The knock at the door, he starts the recording. He opens the door. You see Craig Hicks standing on the other side of the doorway saying something along the lines, and excuse the paraphrasing here, but it's going to be quite close. You've got too many cars here. And Barakat responds that they're within the regulations. And Hicks says something along the lines of, if you're going to be disrespectful toward me, I'm going to start disrespecting you. He reaches for his holster, unholsters his handgun, fires multiple shots. Barakat immediately falls to the floor. There's screaming going on in the background. He then walks over Barakat's body, and you're not seeing this part in particular because the phone is now lying on the floor beside Barakat, and the video is shooting up toward the ceiling, but you hear multiple gunshots once again, and the screaming ceases as Hicks is leaving. He discharges the weapon one more time in the area where Barakat was as well. And that is the end of the video, which was shown today in the courtroom. In that moment, there was a lot of emotion, obviously. Dr. Suzanne Barakat, who was Dia's older sister, appeared to faint during that portion. She did seem to be okay. She stayed through the hearing and was present afterward as well. And that was shown today with the understanding from Judge Orlando Hudson that it would not be recorded in any form or fashion mm-hmm. by the media that was present so as to not be distributed from there as well.
Right. Speaking with WCHL's Blake Hodge, so in terms of the sentencing and all of the details that had to be hashed out today there, what was in dispute or what still had to be decided in terms of the sentencing today?
Yeah, I'll answer that in just a second. One thing that I should have mentioned about the video is that there were a couple of other videos that were shown today as well. These were clips from the interview of Hicks with Chapel Hill Police mm-hmm. where he's describing a scene where he's talking to Barakat and Barakat is cursing back at him and possibly making a movement toward Hicks, and the video does indisputably show that none of that is true.
Right.
I should have included that whenever we were talking about that the first time around. Mm-hmm. So to talk about the sentencing thing, that was in one of the things that kind of caught attention early on was Hicks, whenever he had a chance to speak early in the proceedings, said that he had wanted to plead guilty since day one with the death penalty, whenever that was still on the table and being considered by former District Attorney Roger Eccles in his office, I should say, in handling this case. So there were some questions afterward as to why did it take more than 4 years and what has brought it kind of accelerated in the last few months. And it seems to center on Satana DeBerry, the District Attorney in Durham County now, withdrawing this as possibly a capital case where the death penalty could have been sought. Once that was off the table, that seemed to cut through some of the regulations that come along with a capital case in North Carolina. And as you talked about with the sentencing, there is no real deal here. He's going to be serving three consecutive life sentences, meaning, you know, and a lot of times these will be concurrent things mm-hmm. where they're all kind of running together. He has one life sentence, theoretically at the end of that would have another life sentence, theoretically at the end of that would have another life sentence, theoretically at the end of that would also have the 64 to 89 months, I believe it is, for the discharging of weapon into occupied property. So it was a flat out guilty plea to all of the charges with consecutive sentences. There is no deal to be had there. So it seemed to indicate that a lot of the holdup from before was weighing this possibly as a capital case. And once that was out of the way, things were able to be kind mm-hmm. of accelerated from the regulation side of it.
Speaking again with Blake Hodge, and again, the guilty plea was earlier today. And Satana DeBerry afterwards, and I think she spoke with the media, but she also put out a statement that said, and I think this is exactly right, that, you know, today is about the guilty plea and the sentencing, but certainly going forward, what's important out of this is to remember the life and the legacy of Dia Barakat and Yusor Abu Salah and Razan Abu Salah, the work that they did and the work that they continue to inspire. And in the last 4 years, and I know that this is something that you've been following very closely, a lot of initiatives have come up both locally and now literally globally to continue their work. And as we wrap up this conversation, talk about those initiatives for people who don't know what's going on.
Yeah, so there's a few things with the Lighthouse Project, Project Refugee Smile, which is the last thing that Dio and Yusor were kind of working on together, where they wanted to be able to provide dental service to refugees in particular. They had gone on a couple of trips in the past, and they had another that they were planning on that ultimately they obviously were not able to go on. So a couple of those, also the R3 Winners Foundation, mm-hmm. and a few things that have been picked up even more kind of adjacent to the families. In some of these cases, there's been an annual day of service that happens with the School of Dentistry, where Dia Barakat was a student and Yusor was set to join him and I believe it would have been the next semester from when the shooting occurred. So that, and they also, there's also an annual food drive that has been put on in Raleigh. That was another big initiative of Diaz and Yusor's and Razan's, was helping those who were experiencing homeless, feeding those who happened to be hungry at the time, and trying to do as much good in the world as it seemed as though they could do in a relatively short lifespans.
Well, again, that work will continue to go on for years to come, but the legal process comes to an end today. Blake Hodge, thank you so much for being with us.
Yep, thank you, Aaron.